Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation and such. So, I was thinking today about all the other crap that people think. So, during one day, all the thoughts that might pop into people's heads and, just how disgusting and unappealing most of it would be. Just to be able to view it, on some kind of, you just point the camera at the person and you could see what they're thinking, what's on their mind, what they're really calculating as they go through their day, what they're fantasizing about and what they're imagining and, what their problems are and what their fears are and all of that kind of crap. And that would be... it would be interesting to see all that stuff, but you can draw some pretty general conclusions that most people are just, preoccupied with crap. I mean, minutia, little petty hatreds and angers, love, desire. Yeah, that's the one I wanted. Where to get their next fix of whatever it is they're after, whatever the thing is that they're trying to, what kind of advantage they're trying to gain in their struggle in life. And I have a bit of cynicism just because I know what goes on in my own head and how, kind of crappy a lot of it can be. Now, I have to argue that, in the last 20 years or so, I've spent a lot more time thinking about things that don't have any personal texture. I mean, there's no way to make it into something that's personal. It's just puzzle solving kind of stuff, riddles. It's a chess game of sorts or something. And so my mind is preoccupied with strategies about even doing this, making a video. Now, I have to admit, I don't spend much time because I feel inept at being able to present myself, do theater that would be at all functional or purposeful, because I don't like being deceptive, and if I did anything, it would just be to be funny, and so I have thrown a bit of that in here and there, but it's I just don't like the dishonesty of trying to present myself as something that would appeal to somebody just because, just trying to make it. It's like, wearing cologne or something. I mean, it's just trying to fake it so you can get through the door kind of crap. And it seems that people of useful intelligence shouldn't need me to do that. So it shouldn't matter, the messenger thing. They should be able to figure out that the messenger can be a bit off as long as the message is useful and, fits or makes sense or has some sort of integrity as logic or reasoning. And that should be the only part that really makes any difference. So that's what I tend to hope to be able to explain. But in the bottom line is I'm just explaining what I see. Okay, so from my perspective, my life history, I'm just trying to explain that, this is how I grew up and this is how I fell into my life. And it wasn't with some insane amount of enthusiasm and some sense of fearlessness. Instead, it was kind of blighted by a sense of dread and doom and, the odds are against you kind of a perception, and I didn't have any sense of immunity. And I didn't think I was special, and I didn't think the system, whatever it was, run by a god or by nature or by human beings, I didn't figure the system was going to find me suitable for good fortune and luck. Anyway, didn't seem like I wanted to go into the business of gambling, because yeah, I didn't feel lucky. Simple enough. All right, so I had kind of a wary, I was going to say it's pessimistic, because that's not fair. I think it was fairly apprehensive and careful in some respects. You have to be kind of wise to be careful in, you know, kind of the best way, you know, and I was probably never wise enough to be careful on purpose, or without doing it in some general way, because I wasn't smart enough to figure out what specifically you had to do to be careful, to be safe, or whatever that term would mean. So I made plenty of mistakes, let me just put it that way, where I look it back on hindsight and I say, gee, that was really dumb, or boy, I was really stupid, and insensitive even, something like that, because I wasn't aware of the depth of the consequences, because I wasn't aware fully of the idea that it's not a single player game and it's too expensive and it's not my money and all of that kind of crap. So anyway, I've just done this kind of lead in that's kind of ooh, somebody's going to say, ooh, I don't want to talk about that, I don't want to listen to that shit. And then I'm going to get into some sci-fi thing that might have appealed to them, but they already left. So too bad, they're going to miss it. So anyway, that's what it led to, was me thinking about the psychology of average people and all the little trivial stuff they're thinking about. And so that reminded me of, you know, I've always kind of thought that I could incorporate much of my philosophy into some science fiction film of some kind, and that might be more persuasive than all of this, you know, conversation. And, you know, but obviously acting it out with stick figures, you know, like a paint that'll, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Obviously it'd have to be a $10 production, and I don't think that's going to be a blockbuster, but who knows? I mean, movies today are so, I mean, some are so bad, that you can say, well, you know, might as well give it a shot. So anyway, the premise would be something like, so that's what I thought about today, is, you know, how can I incorporate what I want to get to, which is all this human psychology and the fact that people are living lives, you know, completely distracted by trivial bullshit, by some event, okay, that would require human beings to take something seriously for a change. And so the idea, okay, I'll just give you the simple premise. So the idea is you have an alien intelligence. Now, the trick is going through all the ways you can make one of these aliens, and it's, you know, to make them like humans in the sense that they have this fucked up biology where our emotions are so entwined into our psychology and intelligence that there would be no way to, you know, there's no way to separate ourselves from our sensations, you know, to pull the thing apart and get, all right, this is what I feel like doing, and this is what I understand to do, you know, and separate them really clear, where this is the part that can do logic and think, and this is the part that's afraid and hateful and petty and, you know, all the other crap. And I was thinking that, you know, an intelligence could theoretically, okay, I don't really think it's theoretically possible, but look, theoretically, see, I don't want plot flaws either. So it gets into a bunch of thinking about exactly what our psychology is. And the key thing that's going to be happening in the universe, no matter where you go in the universe, is evolution. So every intelligent thing would figure out that it's the product of just chemistry evolving, you know, circumstance, you know, and the fact that this natural selection, you know, that anything that becomes replicatable and that is changeable, those two features will evolve. And so this other intelligence would have to evolve, And the premise is that it evolved in a circumstance where it doesn't have sensations, and that all of its primitive impulses, that is, the impulses that got it to the point where it could become more intelligent, that is, it could store vast amounts of information, it could process, it could speak a language, so to speak, it could label things in the world and manipulate the labels in their calculating intelligence. But all the primitive stuff, the stuff that got them, made them able, all the knee-jerk stuff, all the simple reflexes, they were able to separate them and just turn them off. Okay, and it's not like they had sensations, but they would have dogs salivating kind of reflexes. So, you know, they hear a bell and they would start salivating because they had this association with food. And so all of that stuff they could just turn off, and then they could just focus on being logical and acquiring information and, processing what they could find as the truth of the puzzle of being in the universe and having the intelligent capacity to label things and understand planets and suns. Well, they're all moons, right? Everything's a moon, okay. The sun's a moon of the galaxy. The planets are moons of the sun, you know. Anyway, the other feature of this is I can cram my physics into it. So that would also be the kind of a fun part. So anyway, so this intelligence sends out these probes, okay, that can replicate. So they can land on a planet, mine the resources, make a new probe, okay? And that's part of how, you know, their construction is mechanical more than biological. So you could argue they're more like a... No, I wouldn't argue they're more like a computer, but, you know, the hardware's different. So they can not only replicate themselves, they all, you know, of course they know how to do that, but they can replicate, you know, the machinery to travel through space. And the mission is to collect information, but it's also to be capable of finding problems and providing a solution. Okay, so because it understands that evolution, you know, it's smart, so it knows that evolution could possibly go in all kinds of directions that might be really bad. And so if evolution's taking place somewhere else in the universe, it might be doing something quite insidious, because they could look at their own history of evolution and recognize that this natural selection thing, this survival of the fittest thing, was brutal, even though they didn't feel, that it wasted a lot of resources and material, trying to perfect something. And the definition of this perfection is just being able to calculate better, you know, to add up the facts and draw accurate conclusions from, you know, where the facts point. So anyway, they show up as a probe, you could argue, an intelligent, talking, synthetic, you could argue, intelligence. Okay, synthetic in the sense that it's just doing logic, and that's all it's doing. It's just processing a circumstance and drawing conclusions. And so what it has concluded, okay, is that, the life form on Earth has obviously evolved through this process. It's recognizing that their looks appears to be a problem because the organisms are sensate, and they can't sample it, but they can know of its existence. And so then they, basically the idea would be, is they take, let's say, 10 humans. So they tell the human race, you know, pick 10 people. And, you know, we'll transport them up here, and they're going to make some decisions that you're all going to have to live with. But they're going to first, we're going to instruct them on how the universe really works, because you're really ignorant and stupid and have a lot of silly ideas. So first, we're going to make sure you understand why your ideas are silly and it's not true, and what you think and what you believe and all this other crap is just crap, and that you're just living in this physical universe with this flow of energy in it, and you really can't accomplish anything. There's nothing to accomplish here. You just make these machines, and the machines don't have a function, and they're not curing some problem that exists in the universe. And the only way they can fix anything in the universe is to actually find things that are broken. They can't fix the things that are broken. They can just eliminate the things that are broken. Well, anyway, so they're not going to tell them what the game is. They're just going to say, pick 10 people you feel will satisfactorily defend your values, and something like that. And then these 10 people will in the end be responsible, after they've been educated, okay, about what the truth is, then they're going to be responsible for whether life continues on Earth or not. And I was thinking of added the catch that if they choose, okay, for life to remain, they have to stay on Earth. They go back. And if they choose to exterminate life, then the aliens are promising them an immortality where they can exist because everything is everything is synthetic, okay? Our perception is synthetic, and it can just be created as an illusion. It's a function inside of a brain. It's just a mental state. It's a state of electrons and protons. And they can allow this, they could allow your identity to survive forever, okay, including the part that is sentient and desires and has fantasies, and that part would just live in a virtual reality while you were traveling around. And for some portion of the billions of years that you would exist, you would spend some time communing intelligently with the other intelligences, the other computers, and just cross-checking information and ideas and perfecting statements about reality, that kind of thing. But most of the trip you would just spend living in a fantasy that you've pre-chosen but won't be aware you pre-chose. Anyway, so that would add an interesting the catch, just because then you have this element where you could have people who would basically just sell out all the other living things as long as they get to live forever, anyway. And then the whole test would be the people who go back and have now sentenced all these living things to be tortured forever well, for at least another 5 years or whatever, and that would be interesting also. When everybody knows what they voted, how they voted, and the whole thing has been recorded, the whole conversation between the people and the aliens. And so all of it can be scrutinized by all of the humans on Earth, and they can, understand what was at stake, and, what silly statement by some silly human, some stoic, better torture than dead or something. I don't know. Some silly axiom of rubbish. I did it for God, whatever. Anyway, it'd be an interesting, I think, to just play with all the psychological implications of people being put in that difficult circumstance of being responsible for all of the future suffering that would ever be experienced on Earth. And it's really their fault. I mean, they're going to be entirely to blame. I think that's a very interesting dilemma for a human being, even one who, talks the talk. Because if you had to walk that walk, again, actually injecting kids with cancer because you think you're worth it, that kind of idea. So that's probably even a better, if I could bend it into that circumstance where the pro-lifers would actually have to see or experience all of the slaughter and harm and suffering, and maybe even feel some of it, feel what their victims feel, but that might be too obvious then. And there's no way to do that, I suppose, in some way where the audience actually feels it. because even if they see the person squirming in pain, they'll just say, well, that didn't really happen. It's a movie. Something like that to escape, to escape the argument embedded in the drama, created. All right. So that's probably enough of a start. And then I'll think further. But anyway, it's something so many things to work on. But it's probably, it's probably impossible to make all of these good arguments in just an hour and a half or 2 hours. But who knows? Especially when you're trying to tell some other story while you're telling this story. I just wish I could go travel through space for a billion years and, write the book, a word every 15 days or something. That would be fun. No pressure. Anyway, until later and such. All right. So I was just thinking about the whole evolution thing and that being something that anything that would become intelligent in the universe would have to recognize the process that built them and the flaws in the process. And part of the process I was just thinking about was why would something become intelligent in the first place is because there was something for it to see and process and understand and react to. And so in a sense, the intelligence has to wait for the environment to get complicated. If the environment isn't complicated, then you don't get complicated. There's nothing complicated to see here. So like if you're a coral and you're in the ocean and the ocean's always doing the same damn thing over and over and over again. You don't need a whole bunch of senses. You don't need a whole bunch of anything because all you have to do is grab your food and that's it. It's always there and you just always grab it and that's all you're dealing with. And it's not until there's a bunch of other organisms that might eat you, or your food is complicated in the sense that it's all kinds of different things you could possibly eat. Do you need intelligence to be able to figure out how to catch the stuff or how to run away from the stuff? And that's when life gets complicated. So the first things that crawl on a volcanic island or something, there ain't much to see here, right? There's not much diversity. There's not much going on. So they'd end up just doing the same thing and it'd be a kind of a dull organism, and you wouldn't have to be very complicated to get by. And you only have to get complicated when the environment gets complicated. And so intelligence starts as the scheming tool, as the tool for catching food and preventing yourself from being somebody else's dinner. And that's about it. And then it's not until you get enough intelligence where you can start examining models and systems more complicated or more abstract from your own. So, you know, we would exist in the sunlight, you know. So we go back 200,000 years, humans were kind of dumb. They just basked in the sun. They didn't understand the sun. You know, they didn't know anything about it. And they could see the stars and they could see the moon, but they had no conception, no ability to draw reasonable conclusions. They certainly had the ability to draw unreasonable ones, let's say, you know, that they're all gods and spirits and souls or some other kind of crap, you know, rather than just things on fire. You know, I'm sure some, yes, I'm sure it occurred to some people 10,000 years ago that, you know, they might be living in a very crude place. And that's all that light was, is the same thing that suns produce and all that kind of crap. You know, they could do that deduction. But anyway, side subject. So intelligence has sort of a rotten foundation as just kind of a crass survival tool. And, you know, it doesn't have any high-minded ambitions. It's just part of that evolution thing. And the only thing that makes us a little bit, you know, by disposition, a nicer animal is the fact that we were tribal and we needed each other to survive. We weren't very good on our own. And, you know, we needed infrastructure. Let's just put it that way. So for at least 20,000 years, humans have been needing infrastructure. They need somebody to keep the fire burning. They need this. They need that. You know, need a whole bunch of stuff, a system. You know, they need blacksmith, so to speak, or, you know, somebody to, you know, tan the hides and make the clothes and do this and do that. So without that infrastructure, they're a pretty weak animal. And so it's only through that infrastructure that we have some sense of caring for each other and having some sense of being in it. You know, not being a single player game, even that to some people that might be intuitive understanding, as long as they don't make it racial or nepotistic or nationalistic or all of that crap. You know, that it, the rules are there's really no limit to how unsingle player it is. Or single kind, or single anything, tribe even. And that the better game to play is understanding that context, and that any conflict that might exist, exists circumstantially, not by rules, not by obligation, but by poor organization and you know, an inability to find a better way than to smite each other. All of that is just a matter of pragmatism and negotiation and reasoning, and the failure is the inability to do something that obviously necessary, I guess, is it's, you could almost say that's the theme of many sci-fi movies, is this inability to, you know, the Federation goes into space to go solve problems, you know, and they themselves don't even have the skills to solve their problems, you know, they get into, you know, wars with the Klingons and all that kind of crap. So there's, you know, there's lots of nuance to all this, and, you know, so if, you know, so maybe it's just something I'll do as an open document somewhere, or I'll just do this script outline and see if other people want to add and subtract and whatnot to the writing of the script of, you know, what I think would be an interesting psychological experience. For people to just contemplate the bigger picture instead of being so focused on the little, the dog pooped on the living room carpet, and you know, we have a crisis now, and we have to you know, whatever the minutia and bullshit of most people's preoccupation, what they're concerning themselves with, myself included. I mean, I have to argue that I just, yes, the new me, okay, especially in the last 10 years, since I started doing this physics thing, I really have become, I do spend a lot of time, you know, modeling mechanical systems, rather than fantasizing regarding any hope for my future. And I suppose in some sense it's because I don't have much hope. You know, my future is kind of a dismal, the writing is on the wall, so to speak, and it's not very good writing. And, you know, so, yeah, so it's probably best that I not be preoccupied with my own gratification of some personal desires. Yeah, they don't have much power, I guess I would say that, you know. I mean, fantasizing still has some power, but doing anything in the realm of any realistic planning for any acquisition of any future circumstance. No, I don't do any of that. Yeah, no. So it's just a matter of surviving, really. I guess that's what you do. You know, you start your life just trying to survive in some sense, because everything is, you're, you know, you're so behind on the learning curve. You know, you're such a child. And then as you get older, you're back in the same circumstance where you're just trying to cling to what you have, and you know, it's kind of dismal. Frankly, I don't know why there aren't more older people giving sensible, it ain't what you're hoping it's going to be, you know. Retirement ain't all that. You know, the golden years are plated, you know, it's just lead, yeah, with a little bit of gold foil on it, yeah, but anyway, yeah, so I'll be back, and we'll see what else I can add to the theme of telling this story as an indirect narrative. So, yeah, it'll be full of pointed, you know, the plot will have plenty of points to it, but the idea is to do it without being direct, you know, and such. So anyway, so yeah, till later. Yeah, not much later for you. All right, so sometime later. Anyway, so I was thinking. So, yes, the thoughts were, probably you could do this lots of different ways, right? You could just capture 10 people, you know, and oblige them to, you know, make the decision, and nobody knows anything about it. The issue would sort of be with this technology exchange. That would be the tricky part, like, why the intelligent robot civilization thing. You know, they'd have rules about something like, you know, can't trust us with technology and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you have to make up some reason why they wouldn't share the technology, and give us the capacity to make all of those decisions for ourselves. But even that would be an interesting theme for a, if there was an intelligence that communicated with the human race and had the capacity to create virtual reality, you know, for the human race or something like that. And then that would provide a dilemma for the humans because, yes, of course, they'd have to concede that their real life isn't all that. Yeah. But anyway, so it got me thinking about The Matrix, other sci-fi movies, and then all the plot flaws. And, you know, I was just thinking about the idea that, yes, it was a popular movie, so at least this appeals to people. But then you wonder what's appealing to people, because for some people it's just all that karate crap, you know, that to me was just a gigantic, it just ruined the movie, because it's so ludicrous in a way. I mean, if the robots were going to create, the machine world was going to create a weapon against troublemaking batteries, they wouldn't run out of bullets, you know, this silly kind of crap. And, you know, just even that kind of crap where, you know, they fire 6,473 bullets in a movie and only two of them hit anything. You know, just, sorry, no sale. Just sort of, it's like, okay, we can't really write this story correctly, so we're going to put this, you know, giant plot flaw in it. and then you'd wonder how many people would, if you could, it's like the Matrix, there would be no reason to have the mundane Matrix, you know, when you could have an individual Matrix for each person, and, you know, you could do it both ways, and either way, it doesn't have to be a tedious existence. But anyway, and then you're right back to how happy you can make a person, and that there's some little fine line you have to travel, you know, between too much, you know, and too little gratification, you know. And that's really all we're after, and, you know, people can pretend it's something else, but it's either gratification of some thought that's been turned into some sort of emotional, I mean, you need it to be true, to be undistracted by this issue, this problem. So for problems to go away, they have to have a resolution. So if your intelligence recognizes a problem, then it's not going to be satisfied till the problem is resolved in some way. And so then it becomes an emotional problem. So, yeah, all of that, you know, is a good place for messing with human psychology. In terms of, there has to be a certain amount of problem, but there has to be little problems, not big problems. You know, to find the balance. Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, I'll do some more thinking. See what happens. But there's, you know, so many ways you could go with this. Just occurred to me that you could, you know, there's just lots of ways that you can create a dilemma for the human race where they have a choice where, you know, they get what they really want and they have to sacrifice what they pretend to want. That kind of thing. Yeah. Alright, back. So, I was thinking, and, you know, so one thing leads to another. So I was thinking of The Menagerie, the first pilot episode of Star Trek. And I think it's like my favorite science fiction story ever. And they did it very well, frankly, for back then and such. And it's pretty provocative in the statement it's making. And there's ways I can convert that or find parallels in terms of the problem with this, you know, getting very intelligent, and the ethical issue of, you know, whether you can enslave something to your existence. And so that had an element of it where the idea was is to capture some humans so they could menially take care of all the labor problems, all the maintenance of the biosphere and food and all that kind of stuff. So the intelligences could just do their fantasizing and wishful thinking and all that kind of crap. So it's sort of like a half virtual reality. A virtual reality with the real context of, you do have to deal with your actual problems and now and then. And so yes, and the conclusion was is that it's unethical, to enslave. And it's only because humans don't like being enslaved, was the excuse. But frankly, it doesn't matter what you're enslaving. It doesn't matter. It just matters on whether it's going to be tormented in some way by the enslavement. So you could argue that, human pets aren't really tormented by their enslavement to some extent. I mean, we do surgeries on them and do all kinds of things that aren't very pleasant and are pretty imposing. So, and certainly take advantage of their psychology in some respects, and kind of force their behavior to match our expectations. So anyway, because it is the theme of this whole, the whole point isn't to find a place for humans to hide from reality. The point is to recognize the dilemma of evolution and the problem of all of the unnecessary wasted harm it can produce. And again, it's not so much about saving humans as it is or preserving humans from harm, and it is recognizing that there's gazillions of animals trapped in their natural niches and being obliged to endure the attrition. So you could argue that humans, 100,000 or 200,000 years ago, lived that bleak existence. Women had to have 20 kids, and two of them might survive, or one. That was the bleak reality, is that you had to watch, you had to go through this process a lot, and watch a lot of harm come to the things you cherish most. So, just such an obvious defect in existence. Even 300 years ago, it was really nasty. I mean, it wasn't, it's like you had a pretty much a 50-50 chance that, your wife was going to get killed by pregnancy. I mean, 50-50 over a lifetime. That eventually it would do her in. Just wasn't really very nice. Probably wasn't that high, probably 1.25 or something, but it's still, a lot of people had to watch their kids and their mate be destroyed brutally. And you're just saying, how'd they get over that? I mean, it just didn't seem like the kind of thing you get over with any kind of optimism. And I guess that's where God comes in, and some stoic notion of how it's all for the best somehow, and that they're all in heaven now, and all some kind of fable they tell themselves to make the badness go away. And it's so hard to believe that smart people 300 years ago could still manifest any notion as an adult that the fables of their childhood could be true. These just these silly stories, really. And they are so silly. There's just nothing in the Bible that has any, doesn't say anything to, didn't say anything to me that seemed like anything to do with anything encouraging. Nothing just that, you know, it was just this rule book about how, you know, the organ I found to be the most useful and entertaining was, you know, this hated, awful, vile, sinful thing. So even, you know, right up from the beginning, you're just like, "Jeez, you know, fuck you then." yeah, what do I need your religion for? You know, it was a chastity belt. It wasn't, you know, it was just crap. Anyway, I mean, I just don't know why. I don't know how that dogmatic, authoritarian kind of God image could appeal to anybody. I mean, you just want to stick a knife in his head. If you ever met this God guy, he's such a frickin' boner killer. Anyway, seems a side subject. So anyway, yeah, the menagerie. Yeah, it was just a, you know, really good story. If you haven't seen it, you really should see it. I don't know if they ever made a remake of it. Don't think they could do it better, but who knows? You know, it could make it an hour and a half. Well, I guess it was a 2 hour. Yeah, it was two episodes. I remember now. But you know, one episode was just a repeat of the other episode. So some of it, I mean, you know, there was a lot of blending it, smashing it together. Anyway, I think well, see, it has virtual reality in it again, which is, you know, this whole idea that, you know, we're better off if it's all our perception is an illusion anyway. I mean, technically, it's all illusion. I mean, yeah, our eyes feel like they're right connected to the computer, and the computer's seeing what we, you know, but it is all a bunch of wiring and connecting that creates the actual image. It even fills in the missing pieces. You know, your brain fills in the spots just so you don't get confused. And so, I mean, you know, it's a rendered thing, something processed out of the sense information. And so, you know, what's the difference? Reality or, you know, bullshit? Because reality is bullshit, frankly. There's nothing great about knowledge and understanding if there's nothing you can do with it. And that's the catch. So it's almost like we need to separate the part of the human that needs the fun story from the part of the human that knows that it has an obligation to take care of business, you know. But there's no way to do it. I mean, the biosphere has to go. It's the only rational conclusion. You can't enslave a bunch of sentient organisms to brutal and horrible conditions and death, you know, being at constant war without intervening. It's just cruel. And, you know, so what's the solution to the problem? Is do we spend a whole bunch of resources devoting ourselves to living in some pretend world where we just play fantasy games? Or do we just concede there's not much to do with this notion of existence? You know, except become a synthetic intelligence that goes out and searches for other Frankenstein monsters to, you know, humanely put out of their misery. Anyway, until the next time and such. Soon, probably. All right, back. So I was thinking, okay, and so I was just thinking about the immortality part, and again, the would humans, if there's some way to bend this into the story somehow, because I think it is a the good test that if you offered somebody immortality, would they be more inclined to accept as the payment for that their reproductive capacity, their capacity to procreate, you know, create new humans. And I sort of tend to think, yes, okay, that, yeah, the majority of people would sacrifice it because it isn't anything to sacrifice, frankly. You're not giving up much, especially in a circumstance where, I mean, even in the world we exist in, if you want to raise children, there's plenty that need raising. There's already plenty of abandoned ones. But regardless, there's lots of ways that you can be part of maturating children, teaching lots of things. So if that's something you just have to do, there's ways to do it that are less risky and dangerous than making a new person for you to fiddle with. So it's another angle of leverage to try to get people to concede that it really is just about some unrealistic sense that you can, you know, that somehow you will somehow you're going to live a better life in the future, when no, the odds are you're going to live a less life in the future. I mean, if you're watching this video, you're probably already you're probably more than average intelligence, because obviously, you know, yeah, we know what the average morons are watching. And it's not any kind of conversation about what it is to be a human being on Earth is not part of the fun for them. It's a lot of angles. So I'll try to reduce the number of angles. It's like you want to incorporate every little thing you can into the story, and you really can't shove it all in there. All right, I thought of another angle I'd like to put in. The angle I talked about before is this whole putting life on trial. And so it could also be that the theater would be that 10 people are chosen to make the arguments. And the AI, you know, will be the judge and jury and decide who made the better argument. Defending or prosecuting this experiment on Earth, and whether it has enough value to be continued as an experiment. Because the simple argument is we're never going to be able to separate ourselves from the reptile and the monkey. And that's what's going to always be driving us, is intelligence compromised by something that just chases bananas and corrupts the usefulness of intelligence by just turning it into a knife or some other weapon and such. So yeah, that's the other angle that would be interesting, is the trial and opposing the arguments and seeing how weak the arguments in defense are, that they're just made out of wooey hopes rather than any practical recognition of our circumstance. All right, enough for now. Alright, I'm back. It's been a while. And, I didn't do much constructive contemplating anyway. Just going through plot flaws and the different little clips of movies where, you know, you get some glimpse of, the truth about life. And, so I was thinking about The Matrix, and there's a great little speech by Mr. Smith, you know, as he's talking about humans as if they're viruses and all of that, and Yeah, I have empathy, okay, with that sensation of disgust and disappointment with the human condition in terms of what people at least have done with their condition and all of that. So that's a good little piece of rhetoric, in the struggle to convince people, that all this hype and propaganda, it's just thin words, and there's a lot deeper words that kind of, point a sinister finger at existence as just grotesquely wasteful. Anyway, so that sort of again has to be the theme, is the waste that's built into evolution. And that's the real argument, is that whatever progress we can make, whatever we can do to enhance the human condition, it will be at a price, and it's not going to be a price worth paying because there isn't really anything to do in the end. So another problem with the Matrix is the whole motivation for the machines. What motivates them to fight human beings, or to even preserve themselves? Why wouldn't they just nuke the whole thing? Why wouldn't they just send a probe to the moon or something and say, because they could preserve their existence so much easier, like Mr. Spock or something. They can just, put their hands on somebody and impose upon them the fingerprint of their existence. They can leave a residue that you could reconstruct. You could pull the hard drive out of the computer and you have the essence of it. You don't need the rest of the computer. It's that kind of thing. And what for? We're all unique and all that kind of crap, and we all have a different configuration, but it's like a unique snowflake, and then you could say it's like a unique pile of dog doo. It's so what? It's unique. Anyway, so that's why I get a little bit stuck, because you can't get that dark too quickly. But that is the end conclusion. And again, it's not so much that you really have to make this argument about the futility of this struggling thing for nothing, to keep inspiring in children some desire to win a gold medal. Just doesn't go anywhere. Just to replay a soap opera over and over and over again. That there's no end in it. The real important thing is the sympathy for, the beautiful things that will rot and decompose right before your eyes. And, human beings, beautiful people. And, if you've lived long enough, you've seen, horrendous degrades in their function that seem so. Such an indignity and a brutality to be committed against them. The whole Alzheimer's thing, all this kind of stuff, and just how it, ruins. It's like watching somebody get slowly run over by a steamroller or something. It's why would you want to keep watching that movie? So anyway, all of that has to be in there somewhere. The simple argument to be made is we don't have to sit there and talk about how shitty humans are, how shitty human life is. You just have to really talk about how high a price you're paying to, for the illusion that it's the new 2024 version and somehow it's better. Because it has, spread a vision and, whatever, just some bullshit, cameras on wires and they can follow the players and blah, 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 blah. It's just so much more exciting. I haven't watched a modern baseball game. I don't know whether they actually have a camera in the ball now or something, you know. Ooh, yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, who knows? You'd almost say with all that technology being applied to the recording of the event, you know, that nobody would go in person just because it's black and, you know, it's like a 4-inch black and white TV almost to be in there in person in terms of what you can actually see. But anyway, that's just a whole different subject, really. So yeah, it's something to keep myself mindful of, and like I said, I'll try to do something to initiate some sort of project, you know, where people can make a contribution to, and you know, just of, you know, dead end, you know, plot problems, and you know, maybe, you know, workarounds and all that kind of stuff, and see if I can actually construct a, you know, usable script, screenplay. Yeah. Anyway, so it's yeah. So you know, I'd prefer just to be able to talk my way through the reality. But the fact is that people need stories. You know, they need to see the movie to get it. I mean, you know, it's the I was just sitting here, right? And it's like the Hitler card in your own brain. It always pops up as the the big where you really need to see the movie to really get it, you know, sometimes. And you could sort of argue that, you know, some movies did that, you know, like for the Civil War, Gone with the Wind, you know, it had a the great battle, you know, scene of all the wounded soldiers and the horror and all of that crap. And so it was a good piece of, you know, in this kind of trivial story, the backdrop of the Civil War, you know, was well illustrated. And you know, you gain an appreciation for just how brutal it all was. And you could do that with some of the narratives for the struggle of the Native Americans, and you know, the Jews and the Nazis. You know, the stories don't hurt in terms of, although there's an element of propaganda, the idea, you know, and an element of creating personal narratives and stories that are more, you know, that catch our eye for whatever reason. You know, we need there to be individual heroes to root for whatever reason. It appeals to us. Yeah. You know, because it tends to always go that way. It becomes someone else's personal story, and you see it from that person's perspective, kind of thing. But anyway. All right, so till the next time and such, it's probably enough, and we'll see. And it just might be a good way to also organize the, you know, what I kind of struggled with in here in this video is this problem of identifying what the real cause is, and the cause is to rescue the victims. You know, the cause isn't. A secondary cause is okay, improve human conduct while you're at it, but the primary cause is to prevent the future harm, the unnecessary waste of sentient dignity, or however you want to. That's the other part, it's our vocabulary is kind of weak for describing nastiness, you know, in our existence, because it's all been written by people trying to stoic their way around the huge defects. So anyway, all right, now that's probably enough. Okay. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.